Thank you for listening to the Redemption Church podcast. Gather Around the Table is a series that explores hospitality as a way of life, and more specifically, as a way to love your neighbor. For more information about Redemption Church, please visit redemptionokc.com. You can keep up to date on sermons by subscribing to our podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.
We're going to be in Luke chapter 10. If you got your Bibles, you may want to turn there, but we're in a series on hospitality. And we're talking about opening our lives to those around us and inviting them in. And we've said so far that hospitality is not a Martha Stewart thing. It's much more about opening your heart and your life and a relationship up with other people. It's something that's much bigger than just, you know, putting out the silver and the crystal and having a good meal together. That there's a bigger vision biblically to hospitality. And really, it starts with God's hospitality for us, that God himself came and opened up a world, invited us in to live here. And then because we ran away from him, went, sought us out, brought us back home and said, no, I want you to be here. And so he, through Christ, invited us into his family. And so the hospitality of God really is the starting place as we think about what does it look like for us to be hospitable to others. And so we're just talking about what does it look like for us to just gather around tables in our living rooms, in our backyards, gather around the grill, gather around tables in restaurants and coffee shops, and just to love others as Christ has loved us. Christ said that the two most important things in all of the world are to love God and to love others, to love your neighbor as yourself. And so this is really what we're talking about this. So what we're going to talk about today, though, is one of the barriers that we have to this kind of a love. And the problem is that we're just too busy, that we live in a world. I would say if there's a single problem in our world, it's that we are distracted people. And if we're, we just live running from one thing to another and we're usually multitasking while we're running. And that sense of distraction keeps us from being present, from being in the moment, from sitting down with someone and giving them our undivided attention. And if we're going to learn to be hospitable, to gather around the table, to love our neighbor as Jesus calls us to love our neighbor, somehow we're going to have to see Jesus free us from this addiction to distraction that we've cultivated in our lives. And John Ortberg coined a phrase. He said that we're busy, sick people. And I love the way he says that. I mean, we've got a disease of distraction, of running, of busyness that limits our ability to sit and just to love those in front of us because our minds are continually running from one thing to another to another. So let me give you some reasons why. One, because of or some problems with this scenario, one of the things we see is that in terms of our culture, man, we've begun to see our home as a refuge. And the reason is we're so exhausted and so busy from everything that we do all day long that home has become not a place to invite others into, not a place in order to serve others. It's a place that is really a retreat, a refuge, a place to hide, a place for me to find isolation and relaxation. And really what that is, that's code language for I just want to chill and neglect everything else out there for a little while so that I can just try to patch myself up before I have to go do it again tomorrow. And so that's become the pace in which we live. And there's a recent Nielsen study said that Americans watch more than 5 hours of television per day and spend more than 2 hours on their devices. I think the younger you get, that flips and it's more time on devices, less on TV. But think about that for a minute. We spend 8 hours in bed, hopefully sleeping, which is what you need. Although what's happening and studies are showing is the more screen time we have, that time we need to sleep is actually reducing itself, which makes us more tired, which makes us want to veg out even more. And if you think 8 hours sleep you need, 8 hours that you're at work or at class or wherever it is you go, how much time is left if you've got 5 hours on TV and 2 hours of life just looking at an app? I mean, there's not much space for the rest of life to happen in there. You try to get in a workout, a couple meals, and some other things, I mean, you're cratering really fast. And so this becomes a cycle that we just feed. As we continue to pursue it, we get more tired, which means we want to veg out more, and then we keep running. And I think saw someone, he said, you know, we need to change the name of our living room to a vegging room because there's not much life that's going on there. It's mostly people looking at a screen just trying to recover from everything that's going on. But it's so hard because our life, in our world, everything's so instantly accessible, right? And when I was a kid, there's a story my grandmother used to tell. And you know how grandmothers do sometimes, they tell you the same story every time you see them. This was one of those stories in our family. And it was that when I was a little boy, my dad liked to watch a show, and I think it was Hee Haw. Anyone remember Hee Haw? It was genius. Someone give my dad a hard time about that later, okay? But it was hee-haw, and my dad wasn't there. And so I ran up when hee-haw came on. My grandparents, it was just on in the background as we were having some kind of a family deal. And I ran up and I turned the TV off real quick. And my grandfather said, "Dude, what are you doing? Like, why did you turn the TV off?" I said, "Well, I'm saving it for my dad." Because I thought somehow if we just like turned it off, then when my dad got there, we could turn it back on. He could watch hee-haw. But that's not the way it worked back then, right? Kids, I want you to, students, there was a time where if a show came on at 7 p.m. and you weren't sitting in front of the TV, you never got it back. Like, it was gone forever and you never got to see that show. But now it doesn't work that way. The other thing was we only had like four stations. And so you had four stations and you got shows that came on one time, and once they were gone forever. Now you have how many stations? It's like 1,000, and they're all producing their own shows. And no show ever goes away. They're always out there somewhere to be instantly downloadable so you can find them. So you've got this never-ending stream of new shows that you can continue to run after. And it's created this problem. In fact, there's a term that's developed that I thought was hilarious when I saw this. And you can just read this on the screen, but it's called a show hole. Do you know what a show hole is? It's listed here in the Urban Dictionary. I'm just going to read the definition to you. It says, a show hole is when you finally finish binge-watching all the episodes of a favorite TV series on Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, or somewhere. As the credits of the final episode roll, that empty feeling that wraps around your soul because you don't know what to do with your life now. And it says, then it gave an example of how to use this in context. It said, "I think I cried 3 times during the finale, and now I have a show hole where my heart used to be." And isn't that, it's a funny thing, right? I mean, like, you look at that and you just laugh at what it is that they're describing. But the fascinating thing about it is it's kind of a confession, isn't it? There's a little bit of a confession that's woven into that that says, man, I fed myself and fed myself and fed myself and it didn't fill anything up. There was empty calories. There was a void, something that I was trying to fill there. And as I kept binging, right, cramming stuff into that, all I did was get hungrier. It didn't actually solve the problem. And I think, man, when you look at this statistically, the research is saying it's getting worse, not better. You know, for our students, let me give you a couple more stats. And what we're seeing in the youth and the students is it's even worse. In fact, 2012 was the first time that, I'd say one of the things that's causing this distraction is your phone. You know, it's your device. It's the thing that's constantly present on your person. In 2012, it was the first time that more than 50% of teenagers had a device or a phone that they carried around with them all the time. What's the word I'm looking for? Smartphone, there you go. But it was the first time that more than 50% of the students had some kind of a smartphone or a phone that they carried around with them all the time. And whenever that tipping point happened, and now you've got all these different students that have this device all the time, now everyone wants one, right? So your kids get to be in second grade, third grade, fourth grade, and they're all asking for what? A phone, because why? Everyone has one. So that was the year of 2012. 2013, statistically speaking, the people that have monitored this stuff for decades said that in the statistics, the spike happened in loneliness, in depression, in anxiety. That you can statistically prove that as soon as everyone had a smartphone, teenagers' anxiety went up, their depression went up, their stress went up, and actually the suicide rate outdid the homicide rate for the very first time. Men, talk about ramifications of a device that distracts us and keeps us busy and just continues to throw things at us all the time. It says eighth graders who are heavy users of social media increase the risk of depression by 27%, while those who play sports, go to church, do homework more than average cut the risk significantly. There's a trade-off. The article that I was reading made the point. It said, basically, if you just put your phone down and do anything else, you'll be happier. And all the data, the research, the science says that to be true. But yet, what do? We continue to feed it. Do you know, teenagers are physically safer right now than they've ever been in history. But they're emotionally more at risk than they've ever been. There's less chance that something bad's gonna happen. And part of it is because they don't leave the rooms. They stay at home and they're sitting on their device. They're not driving at 16. A lot of them are driving at 18. They're not dating at 15. They're not dating. They may not date at all. They're just going to be on their devices. And so you have this paradox that's happening where they're physically safer than they've ever been, but they're emotionally doing unhealthier. And depressive symptoms in teenage boys went up 21% when social media took over. In girls, it went up 50% by looking at a screen, because it continues to pound on us. By the way, one of the things it said was, if you go to church regularly, you're actually going to be happier. So you're welcome. No, but seriously, there's something about being in church where you stop and you set your device down and you say, you know, I'm going to give God my undivided attention. I'm going to give God's people my undivided attention, that happens week in and week out, that shapes your soul and it nourishes you and gives you something different that you're not going to get chasing all those other things. And so there's a benefit, I think, to just being here. And can I give you one more? This was insane to me about how addicted we are to some kind of an interaction, how hard it is for us to just simply sit still in our own thoughts. There was a research project that was done, and this was in Science, in a journal called Science. In one experiment, the participants were left alone in a room for up to 15 minutes, okay? So this is a whole experiment. Sit down in a room for 15 minutes by yourself. Absolutely freaked everyone out. When they were asked if they liked the alone time, almost everyone, over half of them, reported that they did not like it at all. And then in subsequent sessions, they invited these people to come back. And this next time they came back, they didn't just make them sit alone. They actually made them sit there and periodically gave them electric shocks. Whenever they gave them electric shocks, I don't know who signed up for this. Whoever signed their teenagers up for this, kind of questioned the parenting, but that's another issue. But they gave them electric shocks. And then when they asked them afterwards, they said, would you pay money to avoid being shocked again? They all said, absolutely, I would pay money to avoid having to sit and be shocked. What happens right after that? And the next time they brought him back in, they left him in this room by themselves with the devices that were able to shock them. And over half of the people shocked themselves, just chose to shock themselves rather than have to sit still for 15 minutes with their thoughts. Let me ask you a question. If we're going to sit with someone else and give them our undivided, hard for us to sit with ourselves for 15 minutes, how is it we're going to sit with someone else and give them our undivided attention if we would rather be distracted even by pain than by simply sitting by ourselves? And I think we live in a world that we've become, what you really see is we've got a distraction addiction. We're addicted to interaction, to doing something. We have a difficulty to just sit and soak in the moment, to be in the moment, to be present apart from something else that's happening around us. And that constant feeding of stuff has created a disease in our hearts that really operates a lot like an addiction. So here's my question. How do we love our neighbors and give them our undivided attention when our hearts are so distracted? Let's look at the scriptures and see if we can find something to help us there. In Luke chapter 10, where it comes right after the story of the Good Samaritan, where Jesus talks about what loving your neighbor really looks like. And this next episode shows up. And we're going to look at Mary and Martha, and it's two sisters that are inviting Jesus into their home in order to share a meal with them. So let me read Mark chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. We're going to begin in verse 38. It says, now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me. But the Lord answered her, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. So while Mary sits at Jesus' feet listening to him, Martha's running around kind of freaking out, right? She's scrambling. She's running. She's trying to figure out what it is that she needs to get everything in order and all the things that need to be done in order to create a space for Jesus to come and enjoy a meal there. And so you've got this kind of natural tension that's showing up here. Martha becomes angry because she doesn't feel like Mary's pulling her weight, right? Sisters never conflict, right? I mean, this is a pretty normal scenario. I mean, you can relate to this. You understand what it looks like. But whose idea was it to invite Jesus over? It was Martha's. Whose house was this that Jesus was brought into? It was Martha's. So Martha, she'd initiated everything. She is the one that made this whole thing happen. And now she's spinning out and freaking out about the fact that all of this stuff has to come together. And so you begin to see this difficult scenario this conflict that sets up. And really what you see for Martha is, when I think about the idea of hospitality, it looks like she starts out pretty well, right? When she's initiated with Jesus, she's invited him into her home. It looks like she's doing a really good job. And then the rest of the story is pretty much adventures and missing the point. Like she goes completely the wrong direction. Look at Mary down in verse 39. What are the two verbs or words that use to describe Mary and what she did? It said Mary sat. Mary listened. That's it. Mary just sat down in front of Jesus and she listened to him. Let me ask you, which one of the two sisters practiced hospitality in this story? I think that's the point. Look at verse 40. Verse 40 describes Martha. What's the word it uses there? It's distracted. What was she distracted from? Much serving. Now, we typically think of serving as a good thing, right? I mean, typically, church, you think service, it's like, well, those should go hand in hand, those go well. But what we have here, it's clearly a negative thing. It's meant to be something, it's distracted her from much serving. And what you see is that the point of having Jesus over was not so that you could do stuff for Jesus, it's so that she could have been with Jesus. But she's missed the moment. She's continued to run around the house and try to get everything in order, try to make everything happen. And what you see is Jesus didn't want more stuff. Jesus wanted her to be present, to sit down, to give her his give him her attention. So I'm going to step on some toes here, as I think we need it. Our culture is killing us, I think, with the pressure to perform, and it's limiting our ability to sit down with someone. You know what the real problem here is? It's Pinterest, right? I mean, that was Martha's ultimate problem, was it was Pinterest, it was all these other things, and it's not just Pinterest. I'm not an anti-Pinterest guy. I'm kidding, sort of. But man, it's everywhere. It's in the magazine articles. It's all the headlines you get. It's all the things that get passed around, your social media stuff. It's all the emails your friends send you. It's all the, when you buy something at a store, they send you 84 emails about something else. And all these things are telling you what life is supposed to be like. So let me give you some headlines that you're going to see. It's 12 keys to holiday success, 20 ideas for a perfect party, 48 decorating ideas you can't live without, 103 things you must do at your next event. Like, you know those articles? Some of you, you're acting like you don't know, but some of you are tempted to click every single one of them, right? Like, you see it and you're like, well, what if I missed something? And so you click it and look up, like, what are the 15 things I have to do to the next party? And so you continue to run after these, but you know what the headlines ought to say? It ought to say 186,000 ways to destroy your next event. Because we get ourselves in this rush, and instead of enjoying the event, I mean, we're running around trying to do all these things to make it all perfect, and we miss out on the point. It's throwing a birthday party, and you're so worried about all the little things that have to come together that you'd forget to just celebrate your child because you're worried about the stuff. That's what you see in Martha. And seriously, it's pretty insane, right? I mean, how often do you see one of those a day? It's telling you some way in which you can improve your life if you just do this 10 things that you must do or you're not going to survive. Let me give you another way that this works. Think about social media for a minute, and you're scanning through and you're looking at social media, and your friend from Dallas posts a picture of their family event, and you look at it and you're like, oh, that one thing they did was so cool. And then your friend from Chicago posts something about their kid's birthday, and you're like, oh, I love their party favors. And someone else sends you an invitation. You're like, that's the coolest invitation ever. And then your sister-in-law does something, and you know you can't rip it off, but you think, well, how do I kind of do it without making it look like I stole her idea? And so then now all of a sudden you've got all these different things that you liked one thing they each did, but now you feel like you need to do all of them at the next birthday party, family event, Christmas, whatever it is. And you start to feel the pressure of, I've got to keep up with the person next to me, right? And you wonder why we're exhausted. And here's the thing, those things don't just happen with birthday parties, with Christmas and holidays and other stuff. You know, that can happen. That principle applies to every area of life. It can be 101 leadership or strategic leadership decisions. It can be 40 pieces of hunting gear you can't do without next season. You know, it may be, you know, 8 exercises you need to tone those hidden muscles that no one can see. Like, I don't know, you know, there's articles on everything out there, and whatever it is you're into, you see it, and we have this compulsion that says, I need to click that, and I need to figure out how to continue to just add more and add more and add more. And it distracts us, and we end up looking like Martha. And Martha's running around, and she's distracted. And the important thing, I think, is we can get so distracted by secondary things that we miss the main thing, that we lose sight of what's really important. And how many of us set ourselves up for failure by setting unrealistic expectations, by overcommitting, by running after things that no one person can do everything good that everyone else has done on Facebook. Like you take the, and you just do it. It's not possible. And we set ourselves up for failure. And I think that's why Martha says what she does in verse 40. It says, Lord, do you not care that my sisters left me to serve all alone? See, when serving becomes less about loving others and more about loving our service, we tend to get frustrated. We tend to get angry about what's going on because we're running after things that we can never achieve. And so we're constantly dealing with a disappointment. We're constantly dealing with the letdown feeling of I didn't do enough or it isn't good enough. And that's when we sometimes feel angry and all alone because things have gotten stressful. And the thing about the stress is we brought it on ourselves. We invited it in. No one forced us. Martha invited Jesus to come into her house. And then she's freaking out and blaming everyone else when it's not going the way she wants it to. And I think it's important for us, when we think about this, it's why our focus has got to be on loving our neighbor, not on loving our hospitality. Do you know one of the greatest gifts you can give is your imperfection? One of the greatest gifts, I think, in this world that you can give to others is your imperfection. Just to invite people into your home and let them see that it's not perfect. Because here's what I know. Everyone in this room has dirty dishes, right? But we like to pretend like we don't or like they always get done like that. Everyone here has a child. That child has dirty underwear in our laundry rooms. But we like to pretend like it. But you know, if you invite someone in and let them see that your dirty laundry is still sitting there in your laundry room, you know, sometimes that actually breaks down a barrier so they go, wow, I can be normal around you. I don't have to cover everything up. I can just be myself. I don't have to have it all together. You know, I can come in a little bit frazzled. I can come in and be free to be myself. When you and your kids have toys that are scattered in the family room and they didn't all get put away just immediately. And sometimes that can be something that actually breaks down a barrier between you and someone else. And they go, oh, your kids too? Man, and life's hard, isn't it? You go, yeah, it's too busy. We ran all week. Did you run all week? Yeah, I did. And now all of a sudden there's a connection. There's a bridge that's been built. And it wasn't because of your perfection. It was because of your imperfection. It's because you let your guard down and just invited someone into, not into a pretend world, not into a performance world, but you invited them into your real normal world and just let them catch a glimpse of what your life is like. In verse 41, how does Jesus describe Martha? He says, Martha, Martha. If he was from the south, he would have added sweetheart there. Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. And don't you love that? It's like you're worried about. And he didn't even have to define it. He's like, you're just worried about so much. And all of it is secondary things, right? He says, you're worried about many things, but really there's one thing that's necessary. There's only one thing that really mattered here, and you are spinning out of control, running after all the secondary things that aren't nearly as important. Now, I think Jesus' answer was obviously, from Martha's perspective, was a bit of an affront. It was not what she expected him to say. She thought he would say, Mary, get up and serve with your sister. Instead, she said, Martha, stop and sit down with your sister and just listen. That's the most important thing. Mary has chosen the good. And what's the one thing we can't miss out on when you think about this thing of hospitality and loving your neighbor? It's to love your neighbor. That's the thing that Martha was missing. She had welcomed Jesus in, but he didn't feel welcome because she never sat down with him. She had invited him to come into her space, but she hadn't invited him into her life because she was running around frantically trying to do all these other things. And what Jesus said was, stop, just sit down, give me your attention, pay attention to me and listen. Because Mary has chosen the better part, the shift, and we think about us and what are they taking away. I think that's important for us as we shift and we think about us and what it is we need to do. You notice what Jesus says. He says, Mary has chosen the good portion. She made a choice, right? I mean, life is full of trade-offs. All of life is you trading off one thing for another. Your time is limited. There's only so much of it to go around. You're never going to add more time to your schedule. So what we have to do is we have to make choices with our time. We have to trade it off. And what I want you to know is I'm not asking you to do more. I'm just asking you to do the most important things. When we start this series, I know for some of you it was like, oh, this is going to be this pressure of now I've got to continually have people in my house and I've got to do all these other things. And what I want you to know is I don't want you just to do more. But I do want you to do the most important things. Because I think that's what Jesus is trying to teach us through this case study of Mary and Martha. Psalms offer us a prayer. And I think this is something we have to pray to get a better perspective, to change kind of the way we look at things. Psalm 90 says, "Teach us to number our days the right way so that we may gain a heart of wisdom." And the number one barrier for us is that we live distracted, busy lives. We don't see our time the way God sees it. And so there's a prayer and just asking Jesus, "Jesus, would you help me not to live distracted? Would you help me to see my time for what it is? Would you help me not to run around and fill it with all these secondary things and miss out on the most important things? Would you help me to focus?" The problem is we live in a world that values activity, productivity, busyness, achievement. Anyone seen an award that's given out for the person that's most just present and in the moment? Now, we give awards out for the people that achieve things, right? You're the best earner, the one that closed the most deals, the one that brought in the most business, the one that won the game, the one that had the best grades. We have names and things we call those people. We have ribbons and trophies and things, and we have participation ribbons and trophies and things too. That's different. But our world really, once you get past 18, really it thrives on success and performance and doing and action. And Jesus says, just do what Mary did. Sit and listen. But you'll never get an award for that, will you? No one's ever going to notice that. Yeah, it's what we're called to do. But when you live in a world where you can drive a car and talk on a phone, and where you can send a message and it can reach thousands of people instantly, where you can download anything you want at any given moment, I mean, it's hard to just stop and to be in the moment and to be present with someone else. And yet, I think that's what we're called to do. And so as we think about this, I think one of the things that we see about this distraction monster is that if you continue to feed it, it'll continue to eat, and it'll continue to want more and more of your time. And so you've got to make choices. We've got to take trade-offs and say, you know, I'm going to invest less time there, and I'm going to invest more time there. I'm going to invest less focus and energy there. I'm going to invest more focus and energy over here. But to do that, I think we've got to understand there's some lies we tell ourselves. The book, The Art of Neighboring, listed three of these lines. For me, this was helpful. It just said, lie number one is, it'll slow down someday. My wife likes to remind me sometimes when I go, it's just a busy season. She lovingly, gently says, it's just a season that's gone on like 10 years. It's just her way of saying, it's not going to change. This is life. It's what it is. And we buy ourselves this lie to justify our busy lives that just says, it's going to slow down someday. Another lie we buy is that more will be enough. If I just have a little more, if I have a little more square footage, if I have a little more things, if I have a little more workout time, if I have a little more achievement, if I have a little more money, if I have a little more whatever, that it's going to be enough, but it's never going to be enough. Because if you feed the monster, it just gets hungrier. You're going the wrong way. And so like the show hole, and if you're feeding something that's just going to create a bigger hole in you, you're going the wrong direction. And so it's a lie that we believe that we're going to find something there in more that's going to somehow satisfy. And the last lie that they mentioned was, everybody lives like this. And you ever say that to yourself? Like, it's just too busy. You're like, but everyone does it. It's just a trap. And it's something we tell ourselves, I think, to justify the way that we live. And they don't all live like that. It's just we find the ones that we want to model ourselves after, and we all keep running. And we all keep spurring one another on so that you eventually feel as though this is the only way to live. But I look at Mary and I think of what Jesus said. And he says, Mary chose the good portion. Mary, even contradicting her sister's wishes, said, no, I'm going to sit and I'm going to give Jesus my undivided attention. And she did. And I think like Mary, we need to choose the good portion to stay focused on the one necessary thing. And can I give you two ways to apply this week? The first is kind of a more broad way of thinking about this, is I want you this week to just think as much as you're able of the ways in which you feel distracted, the ways in which you feel your heart pulled in different directions, your mind redirected in different directions. Just try to be aware of that. Begin to ask yourself some questions. Try to live in the moment as much as you can. And then when you feel yourself distracted, just say, what was it that caused my mind to go somewhere else? What was it that compelled my heart to run in a different direction? Ask yourself this question so that you begin to what things distract me? How difficult is it for me to have a 15-minute conversation without my mind going to three or four different things? How hard is it for me to sit with someone and not pull out my phone? What are the things that get my attention and redirect me and keep me from being in the moment with others? Are there times in my life where I stop and I give God my undivided attention? Are there times when I go on a walk and I don't check my phone, but I just allow myself to collect my thoughts or get in the garden or do something that allows me to simply be in the moment without chasing three or four other things at the same time? And just start taking mental notes of in your, maybe even write it down and just say, God, here's the places where I feel the distractions come. And begin to set those aside, those distractions aside. Just pray and say, God, would you free me from the addiction of distraction? Would you free me from all these things? And just confess them. God, I'm sorry that I couldn't focus on the person that you loved because my mind was running to these other things. And just begin to think through that. And then secondly, and would you find one person, one neighbor, one coworker, one classmate, one kind of fringe friend that you don't know that well? And would you just commit to sit down with them for an hour and do your absolute best to give them your undivided attention, to sit and to listen to them, just someone. If you don't have an hour, make it 30 minutes. If you don't have 30 minutes, make it 20 minutes. But you find someone, though, that you say, I'm going to sit down, and maybe right now you need to just pray and say, God, who would that be for me? That there'd be one person that you would initiate with over the next couple weeks, and you'd sit down and say, I'm going to sit and just be with this person, and I'm going to love them the way God loves me. And I'm going to give them my undivided attention. And I'm going to allow that moment for me to practice hospitality and practice what it looks like. Mary chose the good portion. Let's be those who follow her example, who sit down with others and just love them and love them well. Let's be those who practice hospitality. Do you know through the simple act of opening your life up to others, you're saying to a person who may not know God that you're of value, that you matter, that you are important enough that I want to welcome you into my space, into my life, into a friendship with me, and I just sit and be with you because you're worth it. And you're also saying to them that when we welcome someone in our homes, our lives because of Christ, you're communicating to them that the God that I worship is like this. He loves you. He's available to you. He's here for you. And he wants to be your friend if you'll simply trust him. And so, man, friends, for us, when we sit down with someone, it's a simple act of one, we're doing Jesus stuff. We're doing what he said. He said, love your neighbor as yourself. So you're doing something that honors Jesus that's of great value. Sometimes we think we have to go big in ministry, but so often Jesus pushes us to the simple. And this is a simple thing. Sit with someone that communicates to them, you have my attention. You're of great value. And the God of the universe cares about you. And so let's love our neighbors. Let's be hospitable. Let's gather around our tables, our living rooms, our backyard tables, our grills, our office tables, wherever it is that you go this week. Would you just open your heart and your life to people around you and then sit with them and love them? Let me pray for us. Father, I just ask that you would heal us from our distraction disease. Would you free us to love our neighbors? And in so doing, help us advance your mission in the city. Help us to trust your grace. Father, would you stir in our hearts a love for those around us? God, help us to stop chasing after things. Help us not to be anxious and worried about many things, but to do the one necessary thing. Father, fill our lives with love for you and love for those around us. Father, we pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.